Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
It's time to change the situation if Tottenham want to change.
It's in the past. It's in the past. And we look forward, buy our football positive. We're wearing Tottenham shirts. We buy the Tottenham white.
And still Ricky Villa. What a fantastic run. He scored.
He's going to have a crack. He is, you know.
Well, greetings, everybody. Welcome to the latest edition of The Tottenham Way, which comes a few hours after what I think has to go down as the worst performance since Ange Postecoglou took over. And of course, that comes almost immediately off the back of arguably the best performance under Postecoglou against Aston Villa, which really rather sums up Tottenham Hotspur at the moment. It's hugely frustrating. Yet again, I think I'm right in saying for the fifth time now heading into an international break, Spurs lose a match. So we all have to toss and turn and try to forget that had we beaten Ipswich, we would have been third in the league. Instead, we are 10th, losing as many games as we win, with a record at the start of this season very comparable to that of Nuno Espirito Santo when he was sacked ignominiously. I am Marcus Buckland. Dan Kilpatrick of The Standard is with me. Morning, Dan. Obviously, that was a hugely disappointing performance and result against Ipswich. I sense the knives are being sharpened with the manager, which again to me seems to be pretty pointless because I don't think he's going to go anywhere and there's no point in him going anywhere when you look at the bigger picture. But can you explain why yet again Spurs in a match that they really should win have performed as abjectly as they did?
Hi, Marcus. I think that the difficult thing about this up-down yo-yo form is that it is quite hard to explain. It's quite hard to put your finger on why some weeks Spurs are brilliant and kind of capable of blowing away a team like Aston Villa, and then some weeks they're so passive and pedestrian and kind of predictable and have these awful performances like Palace and like yesterday. So it is hard to kind of work out. I think, you know, the one kind of obvious answer is that this still doesn't feel like a team that's capable of playing Postecoglou's football every week, let alone even for kind of 90 minutes at times. You know, they're brilliant in bursts. And I think Villa, you know, the first half was pretty flat. Postecoglou said he thought they played well in the first half. I didn't really agree. I thought Villa were very in control of that and kind of nicked a goal. And then they come out at halftime and just are unstoppable, really, by a very well-drilled kind of quality Champions League level side. And then the following week you get a really kind of flat performance against Ipswich, and it was exactly the same when Spurs blew away West Ham by the same scoreline. Again, came out at half time and were great and won 4-1, and then the following weekend lost at Palace, and they kind of lurch from one extreme to the other. But I think it comes back to the fact that, you know, this is not a team that's kind of able to do what Postecoglou wants week in, week out, and even for the duration of most matches. And you know, that's kind of causing these extremes, I guess. I mean, I suppose to your point about Spurs potentially going third, I mean, that is so frustrating. You look at kind of all the drop points this season, who they've come against and the manner of the games and performances and all the rest of it, and just think it could have been so much better. And yeah, you could easily be sitting ahead of Arsenal right now. But actually, this does feel like a season where everyone is, you know, with the exception of Liverpool, really, who are now 9 points clear, I think, at the top, or certainly 9 points clear of Arsenal and Chelsea, maybe not quite City and Forest. With the exception of them, everyone's sort of struggling to find consistency. And, you know, you look for kind of bigger sort of macro problems like the schedule and all the rest of it. But yeah, I mean, Spurs, I think, particularly frustrating and still kind of, you know, feel like a team experiencing teething problems, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Liverpool are 5 points clear of Manchester City and, yeah, well clear of us and Arsenal and Chelsea. But the main point you made there, which worries me, Dan, is that if this team cannot play the Postecoglou way, what does the future hold?
There's two answers to that, really. I mean, there's two facets to my answer, really. I mean, one is that it is a process. You know, I can totally understand, by the way, why a lot of fans will have already lost patience with this project. I totally get it. I haven't lost patience with it. My position is still the same as it ever was, really. Postecoglou needs more time. There's good things. The general curve is upwards. So, you know, kind of hold your nerve kind of thing. That's still my position. But I get why fans will have lost patience or are kind of in the process of perhaps losing patience. But I think it still feels like a pretty raw squad. I think that's fair to say. Postecoglou spoke a couple of weeks ago about missing leadership and experience, and that's obviously a factor, and you know, that can produce these kind of extremes that we've talked about. And then the other, so the first part of that is I guess give more time to the young players coming through at Spurs and let them develop under this manager and kind of learn what he wants. And the other answer is buy new players. You know, that I think it does increasingly kind of feel to me like that there are quite a few players. I don't necessarily want to like get into naming names and kind of blaming people individually. But you kind of look at the squad and it's been possible to look at it in the past and think, oh, actually, you know, they're not far away, Spurs. They just need a couple of tweaks. And then they'll be right up there with the kind of City and Arsenal in terms of depth. But you look at it sometimes and you know, yesterday was one of those times you just think, there's too many players here that just aren't quite up to the required standard week in, week out, and you know, need to change. And again, like Postecoglou's spoken about, you know, looking at what Arteta's Arsenal looked like in his second season and you know, particularly looking at what Klopp's Liverpool looked like in his second season. And, you know, it was unrecognisable from, you know, season four or, you know, certainly season five. And you know, I do think there's still an awful lot of work to be done in reshaping the squad. And again, that's a process that Spurs have been clear will take several transfer windows. So, yeah, I get, you know, I totally get this isn't necessarily what fans want to hear, but I do think, you know, that the overall answer is kind of more time needed and I guess more change needed.
The trouble is that, you know, some of the players who are coming under intense scrutiny now are players who have arrived recently. I mean, Radu Dragosin, I actually thought he had a couple of really good games. And now the last two games, he's definitely looked a little bit suspect on occasions. I look at some of the stats and Spurs are conceding an alarming number of chances, if not goals, down there, right, and Pedro Porro at right back, great going forward, but I just wonder defensively whether he's as solid as he should be. Brennan Johnson's coming in for a lot of criticism, not tracking back, maybe not quite being a player that warranted £50 million or whatever it was. Destiny Doggy, who I think we all fell in love with last season, doesn't appear, certainly from a defensive point of view, to be as solid as is required. Goalkeeper himself, we know he's got some questions, particularly when it comes to defending set pieces. Timo Werner scores the wonder goal against Manchester City. I mean, I say wonder goal, it's just a miracle goal because he actually scored one. He's got pace and we saw it again yesterday. I kind of think he almost sums things up. Bursts forward, creates opportunities, cannot cross, cannot finish. And again yesterday, to me, some of the crossing down was so pedestrian. And again, the thing that really drives me mad with so many of the players, our best players even, the likes of Kulusevski and Bentancur, they give away stupid free kicks in advanced areas, which loses any momentum that the side's trying to build when attempting to claw back a two-goal deficit. So you can talk about buying players, but there's no guarantee you're going to get the right players. And that is why, for me at the moment, I'm just starting to get really concerned. And when I said yesterday, I think this team is flawed. I think this club is flawed from top to bottom. Because part of the issue, Dan, is that even when we go into the transfer market, we know that managers, Spurs managers, rarely get the players they really want. And, you know, you go and ask Jose Mourinho, you go and ask Antonio Conte, you know, at some point you can go and ask Postecoglou, did he really want to get Odegaard, or was he looking at, you know, somebody from Crystal Palace or Wolves? We know the players who were linked during the summer. So until Tottenham changes their transfer policy, then it's not going to matter, is it, if we just wait for a few more good rather than great players to come in?
There was quite a lot to address there, so I'm not really sure where to start.
Sorry, a bit of a rant.
I mean, look, I'll pick up on a couple of your points. First thing to say, I think the jury is very much out on Dragosin as a signing. He hasn't impressed me at all this season. I thought he looked promising at the back end of last season. The City defeat in that strange game kind of stands out as a game where he defended really well and caught the eye. But he's been really shaky this season, whether that's against Coventry or Galatasaray or on Sunday against Ipswich. And obviously someone kind of joked to me during this Galatasaray game over WhatsApp that Dragosin had a better game against Karabag when he was sent off after 7 minutes than he was having in Istanbul, which I think, you know, there was probably something in that because he was just run ragged by Osimhen. So yeah, I think the jury's out on him. He doesn't look a good fit for the system, really. He hasn't got a great left foot. He looks a bit shaky playing out. He can be a bit predictable in his passing. So that's a bit of a concern. But I didn't really want to make it about individuals because I do think that there's kind of bigger issues at play, really. I guess there's a whole podcast to be done on kind of Spurs transfer policy under Levy. It's a tricky one because Postecoglou's been much clearer than other managers that he has the final say on all transfers. He's never once tried to do what Conte did with Spence, for instance, and paint players as a club signing or someone that, you know, he didn't green light and wasn't fully behind. So I'm a bit uncomfortable with saying, look, he didn't get the players he wants because he's been so explicit that he did. But I think, we can, you know, talk till the cows come home about the players Spurs might have signed and the targets they potentially didn't get. And there is probably something in that. But I almost feel like it's not particularly relevant to sort of working out why they're so up and down at the moment.
Mm. Yeah, I don't want to particularly pick individuals out because it's a collective unit. The thing is, Postecoglou himself, and you have chided me in the past when I've had a go at his attitude after defeats. I just think yesterday, I know he's upset. But part of his job is to address the media afterwards. And one particular interview where a perfectly reasonable question, could you have done anything different? And his answer was, well, you always can when you've lost. And then the response was, well, what? And he refused to elaborate. And it's that sort of attitude that he gives. And he was looking up into the crowd yesterday as he went down the tunnel because somebody said something that he didn't like. Mate, you're going to have to get used to it if Spurs perform like that because fans are paying a lot of money and they're getting very frustrated. I don't think that helps the situation. And there were things surely yesterday. I mean, you're right, Dragosin had a really poor game during the week. Ben Davis was magnificent when he came on the weekend before. Why is he not bearing that in mind and maybe starting Davis? I know he's not a long-term answer, but he was brilliant against Aston Villa. Where are we with James Maddison? Because obviously he is not getting a start in the biggest games this season. Where are we with Son? How well is Son playing? I'll go back to the substitution that was made last week against Villa where he wasn't expecting to come off. I just wonder what's going on in terms of communication behind the scenes there at the moment, Dan.
Again, you made a few points there. I mean, on Dragosin, I think you answered your own question. I think Davis would feel like a more natural fit, especially as a left-sided centre-half, because he can obviously play out on his preferred side. And he has been pretty solid, I think, Davis, when he's played at centre-half over the last couple of seasons. So I do think there's a case that in the kind of short term, he could be playing there instead of Dragosin at the moment. But I think, as you said, he's not the kind of long-term solution. You know, this is a I guess, a project where, you know, Spurs want immediate results, but they're also looking, you know, into the medium term. And I think it's probably fair to say that Davis is not going to be around for the duration if Ange kind of does, you know, 4, 5, 6 seasons or whatever it might be. Whereas Dragosin is obviously an investment for the club and sort of part of that vision. So I think that's probably why he is getting the nod there.
Do you think it's also because they're worried about his very vocal agent who's banging on?
I don't think what Dragosin's agent's
got to say today.
I don't think so. I mean, you just can't. Some players have gobby agents. Some players have agents who, you know, will be trying to put pressure on the club in the media or behind the scenes or whatever it may be. And I just don't think you can listen to them really. And a club as experienced as Spurs and a manager as experienced as Postecoglou will know that. So I don't think it's that. I mean, I do think Maddison's, you know, he's obviously a really interesting talking point. Postecoglou kind of challenged him before the game to show compelling evidence that he deserves to be picked for club and country. But it kind of feels a bit like he's lost a little bit of trust from Postecoglou. I mean, I know that's a strong way of putting it, but he got, I think, 8 minutes plus stoppage time against Ipswich, and Spurs really needed the goal for, obviously, the whole second half. They needed the goal for an hour, really. And Maddison played, again, 8 minutes, and he could have potentially provided that spark. There wasn't a lot else on the bench. And, you know, he even had the kind of potential break of the player who's directly replaced him in the side, Saar, kind of getting injured. But he still didn't come on. You know, Postecoglou called for Werner instead. So, as ever with these things, we don't have the full picture. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes. We don't know if Maddison's maybe carrying a slight knock or whatever it may be, or whether there's some other reason that he's kind of not playing much at the moment. But, you know, there was a question on Friday about Maddison not being in the England squad. And I think, you know, he's actually got a great answer from Postecoglou, but really, you know, that's not the issue. He's a long way from the England squad at the moment. The issue is, why can't he get in the Spurs team? I think on form, Kulusevski and Saar deserve to be in there based on, you know, how they played for most of the season. So it's not inexplicable, but equally, Maddison is a £40 million signing who feels very Spurs, who is a very charismatic, creative player, and he can't get in the side. So I think, you know, that's a talking point, and Postecoglou's kind of reticence to use him, and in fact use his bench in general, as we saw, you know, at Brighton and potentially Palace as well, I think, you know, are slightly puzzling.
And what about Postecoglou's overall attitude? I mean, you have defended.
Yeah, I just don't have respect. I don't have a big issue with it.
He's got to stand up, Dan. Danny's got to stand up and answer difficult questions after defeat, hasn't he?
Put it this way, like, Postecoglou has been doing Friday morning press conferences after Thursday's games, which he doesn't have to do. So after Spurs played in Turkey, they flew back that night. They got back to Hotspur Way. We got back to the lodge at 3, 4 a.m., something like that. And then Postecoglou did another press conference at 11 a.m. to preview the Ipswich game. He doesn't have to do that. He could preview that Ipswich game in Turkey, do a little section after his post-match press conference. He doesn't want to do that because I think, understandably, managers can't really focus on the next game in that environment. But I think, he is accountable. We hear from him a lot. And I've said it before, like, wheeling out managers after defeats, you know, they're not going to be at their best. It's understandable. And he's not alone in that regard. I just don't have a huge issue with him being surly and grumpy when his side's just lost a game. I just don't. You know, he generally gives long answers. He generally answers most questions. And I find him pretty accountable. Certainly much more accountable than many, many people at the club who I think we need to hear from occasionally.
Well, yeah, absolutely. We know where the buck should stop, but after all these years and all these managers, there is one person who still rules the roost. And in terms of how about the hierarchy, the Tottenham hierarchy, are looking at this, Dan, because of course you can paint it in two different ways. Spurs are still top scorers in the Premier League. They still have the third best defence. They would have gone third had they won yesterday. They're in the quarterfinals of the League Cup. They're in a very good position in the Europa League. So there's lots of ticked boxes there. The other stat, though, which I began this podcast with, Ange has picked up 16 points from his first 11 games this season. Nuno Espirito Santo was sacked after picking up 15 points from his first 10. So what is going on behind the scenes at Spurs? Are they starting to question Postecoglou, or is he nailed on for the foreseeable future as far as Levy and Co are concerned?
Well, I think the Nuno comparison is a false equivalence, really. I mean, part of the problem with Nuno is that the football was so poor, and it wasn't really what Spurs wanted, and it wasn't Spurs football, was it? And I think he started very well, and then it quickly became clear that when they didn't win, there was really nothing to back it up. And I think, as you've touched on, some of these defeats under Postecoglou this season have been really poor, but that, generally it still feels to me anyway like there's been Sunday was a difficult one. I think Palace was a difficult one. It was difficult to sort of look for positives there, but like in a lot of the drop points this season, obviously Brighton, they were brilliant in the first half, Newcastle, Leicester, and even Arsenal, you kind of felt like actually the underlying sort of performance metrics, if you want to go that deep, were kind of all pretty good, and it could have easily gone another way. So I don't know what Levy and the board are thinking. To be honest, I think all the noises from the club are that, that they sort of accept that this is a medium-term venture. I mean, they've talked about being successful in the here and now, but they've also talked about, building a squad that they want to be successful in kind of 4 or 5 years' time. And that's been obvious in the age profile of the players they've signed. The three teenagers over the summer, two more coming next year. So I think that there is a kind of commitment to see this through, or at least keep saying where it goes. But again, I can understand anyone associated with Spurs who's kind of losing a bit of patience or getting frustrated. And I guess that, you have to apply that to sort of decision makers as well as fans. But, I don't think, we're really anywhere near a point where it's, a question of Ange's future.
No, the frustration is just deepened by the fact that we do keep losing before international breaks. So now we stew on what's going to happen when we come back. And I remember saying, actually, as we went into the last break, that I felt the period that we've just gone through was going to be absolutely crucial to the club in terms of the season as a whole. And I know I bang on about this, but just the very fact that we beat Manchester City in the League Cup and went through to the quarterfinals, and the fact that although we lost in Turkey during the week, we're doing well in the Europa League, still keeps me buoyant enough, because I just can't work out what's going to happen in this very bizarre league season. But when we come back, we go to City, and you could argue that's a bad, very bad time to be going there, because they've been licking their wounds. I guess they'll have a couple of players back from injury. Then Roma in the Europa League, a home game against Fulham, who are suddenly looking very decent. Away trip to Bournemouth, who can beat anybody when in the mood. And then we've got Chelsea and Rangers in the Europa League heading towards Christmas. So I just don't know, Dan. It's so difficult to pinpoint what's going to happen, how we should be feeling. I mean, looking through your trusty crystal ball between now and the end of the season, I've got to nail my colours to the mast and say I think we're going to win the League Cup. And Ange always says he wins something in his second season, and for that reason alone, you can't sack the guy. If we were out of both cup competitions, I'd really be thinking differently. But there's still potential there. What if I had to nail you to the mast now? What do you think is going to happen between now and the end of the season?
God, I've got no idea.
Well, that's a really easy question to answer.
I guess the beauty of the Premier League really is that you can look at literally any run of fixtures and say, oh, that looks really tricky. If a club's in a bad moment or coming off a bad result, that is always true across the board, no matter who your team's playing. So yeah, I mean, it does feel like another big period, but I think that's kind of always true. I have no idea. I guess the kind of concern for Spurs, sort of big picture concern, is you look at the table and you think, well, they're probably not going to finish above Arsenal and City, even given the form they're both on, and Liverpool. And then it's a question of, are they going to have the consistency to be better than Chelsea, Villa, and perhaps a rejuvenated Man United under Amorim? And then, you know, there's, as you've touched on, the Brightons and Fulhams of this world who are really, you know, to, I think, surprising people and looking up. So, it is a really tough environment. I hope you're right about the League Cup. I've personally still got a nagging concern about the way kind of Ange talks about that competition. But, you know, I hope he is going to sense the opportunity there. Home tie against United. It will still be in, you know, a bit of a period of transition. You know, it feels like a great chance to get to the last four. And then, you know, you've still got two legs this year, and, you know, your Spurs are more than capable of beating any side. So, yeah, I don't know is the answer, but I think Spurs have got to kind of try and find enough consistency to be in that conversation for sort of fifth place. Because I think, you know, again, I think I'm right in saying this, that, you know, we might well have a situation this year where fifth is enough for Champions League, and then, you know, you win a cup and you get that, and you can, you know, you say it's been a very, very successful season. So, yeah, who knows is really what I'm trying to say. Mm.
Yeah, well, I guess that's it. We just have no idea, literally, from one week to another. So I appreciate that was a difficult question. I do understand. I just find it really strange that, you know, there is so much, anger, I guess, amongst quite a large section of the supporters. And we always say this, if you just take your view from social media, you're going to get a slightly distorted view. But I've got some friends, really, really mild-mannered friends who have been Spurs fans for many, many years. And of course, that's slightly driven them mad. But they were apoplectic with rage after yesterday. And maybe it's not just now. Maybe, Dan, this is sort of 20-plus years of the same old thing happening time after time. And for me, underneath it all, that is the problem. I'm afraid that whatever happens this season, even if we win a League Cup, even if we put together a decent run, which at some stage we will, I think most fans realise that until those at the very summit of this club share the same footballing ambitions as the majority of fans, Tottenham will always be in the second bracket. But that's what just makes me feel a little bit flat. And I know I'll pick myself up again, but deep down, you know, going to be different?
I've been saying a similar thing for a while. You know, I think if you somehow took just Postecoglou's tenure in isolation and kind of gave the whole fan base collective amnesia about everything that happened before that, I think you would look at the tenure and you say, yes, you know, it's really up and down, but it's still relatively early days. You know, he's still not even halfway through his second season. It's a very young squad. It feels a bit raw. There's been some great football. I'm quite invested in seeing where this goes. I'm quite invested in seeing if he can build on that great football and make that, you know, a consistent thing across 90 minutes every week, every game. I think that's where a lot of fans would be on this. But the problem is, there is all that context and all that history that's come before. And, you know, let's be frank, you know, a lot of Spurs fans are fed up with Daniel Levy and Enix running the club. They just are. And they're not kind of prepared to sit through another sort of project and build, because they feel like they've heard it all before. And they feel like it never really leads to kind of tangible success. And I've said it many times, like, I totally get that. You know, I understand why Spurs fans will be impatient about it. But I do think if you look at the Postecoglou project purely in isolation, that the players they've signed, the glimpses of the football they've played, the rhetoric he's used, his messaging, his coaching, I think it's broadly been what you want to see from a club mm-hmm. kind of rebuilding.
Yeah, but no,
I just think
that.
There's a lot of baggage that's gone before, and, you know, not least, I think by the way, it's 5 years this week since Pochettino was sacked. And, you know, the majority of those 5 years were just absolute crap. You know, it was Mourinho and Nuno and Conte That, you know, there were a few bright moments in there, you know, Conte's first season, but, you know, broadly, you know, it was bad football and bad vibes. And you know, that again, that's the platform Postecoglou's inherited, and that's what he's building on. So that makes the job tougher. But that also makes, you know, Spurs fans, you know, a lot less patient for this period in time. You know, that they just feel kind of burned by what's come before, I think.
Yeah, and it's going to carry on like this, and it's extraordinary, really, that when you are the custodian of a football club of the stature of Tottenham, and we're not going to start just demolishing the management, but yes, lots of progress has been made. It's a wonderful stadium, et cetera, but, you know, standing still to a large degree. Having said all that, I do look forward to going to games. Rather pleased that for work reasons I couldn't go yesterday, but we'll go and dust ourselves down, have a little breather, drag the two Toms back who are lying in a dark room as well. Actually, where the hell are the two Toms? Well, they vanished. We're all going to have a well-earned break and then come back ahead of the Manchester City game. And who knows what will come next? That's the beauty of Tottenham Hotspur. It's misery, but there are fleeting moments of joy. And let us hope they can just put together a decent run, maybe even buy a player or two. I see Jack Grealish being linked with Spurs in January. Yes, please, somebody like Grealish. And someone teach Timo Werner to shoot. Dan, I mean, just explain to me, the guy's got that pace, that brilliant pace. I like Timo Werner. Why can't you, when you're a professional footballer to the level of skill that he has, why can you not shoot with a degree of consistency? Is it difficult?
Sorry, Mark. Look, I can't do Timo Werner again. We've indulged a lot of your moans on this. I'm not doing Timo Werner.
Okay. No, probably just as well. All right. Well, listen, Dan, thank you for that. Thank you, Patrick, of the Standard. Keep believing, everybody. There's a big pitch to be dealt with, but who knows? Some glory might be beckoning in the short term. I am Marcus Buckland. Come on, Spurs.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.